First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Hey everyone, I'm a regular guest host on the nationally syndicated Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network.
Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline to another great hour of talk radio here on the Main Street Radio Network. Well, we are delighted to have once again founder of SaveTheWest.com, a website dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself. Not a very big goal at all. He is the author of The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Ken Abramowitz joins us right now on The Alan Nathan Show.
Well, great to be with you again.
Sorry, I didn't say hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine. The world isn't doing fine, but I as an individual am doing fine. Thank you.
Tell me something. Do you feel, I just got through talking just a bit ago to a sort of a never-Trumper, an anti-MAGA Republican. As a person who writes, obviously, on great major issues of foreign policy, et cetera, do you think that we're in better shape now than we were, say, I don't know, before November 5th of last year?
Well, yes, we're certainly in great shape. That doesn't mean we're in perfect shape, but we're in great shape. And the administration's doing an excellent job. As we go further, I'll have some suggestions for how they can do a better job. But certainly, if I were a professor, I'd give them a grade of an A. They're addressing many, many issues simultaneously, which was the thesis of my book, The Multi-Front War, that we have to do things collectively, not sequentially. You got a lot of problems. You have a big team. Let's go after all the problems. And so that's why I would give them an A. And I'd say so far, so good.
Well, and given the unbelievable swamp and the amount of corruption and a mess that he was faced with, to get an A after all of that and his ability to juggle so many plates in the air, it just amazes me. You don't have to love everything he does, but not to be able to give this man credit just strikes me as disingenuous. These folks that are already gearing up for 2028 to try to take back power in the Republican Party, gee, I don't know. They did a terrible job before that. And that's why Donald Trump came along, because the Republicans were asleep at the wheel or worse. So many issues to tackle. Why don't we tackle a little bit of Israel and Iran expanded stockpile of nuclear weapons and, nuclear grade uranium. Where are we at now? Some people just tune out because it's this constant posturing and political stuff from one side. And where are we at right now, and where do you think we're headed in that arena?
Well, you have to separate the world in half, in round numbers. Half of the world is part of Western civilization, And there you negotiate. When you have problems, you negotiate because you're dealing with normal people. And half the world is run by dictators. They're not normal people. I mean, they look like human beings, but they don't behave like normal people. And there, negotiation is almost never possible. You need two separate strategies. You need a strategy to negotiate with people who want to behave like human beings. I call that Western civilization, also known as democracy. And you have to have a different strategy for people who behave like animals. I call that dictatorships. And mostly military solutions are required. So that's how I segment the challenge of being a president.
You give me a dilemma because on the one hand, I want to pursue this foreign policy and your prescriptions for it, which I think we should talk about first. But I can't help but think of the number of people who don't behave like human beings right here in our own country, who, for example, are about to elect a Muslim Marxist Jew hater the city of New York. It blows my mind. Well, I mean, they're not sane. They don't have any idea, conception of what America is. So let's do the foreign policy first, and then hopefully you'll have some answer, because it boggles the mind, really.
Yes, and just to complete your comment, and he also hates Christians. So now New York City is
most
95%.
Certainly.
Yeah, 95% yes. Christian and Jewish. So he hates 95% of the people. Can you imagine saying, vote for me? I hate 95% of the people in my audience. But vote for me anyways, because I want to be your mayor. I'm saying to myself, you know, am I living in a movie? Is this like...
Yeah, but you know what, Ken? I want to add, because I have people, I know people who are working on this and trying to take him, you know, take on the issues with him. And the problem is, when you're an avowed communist, or even if you're a secret communist, we know that communists lie to get into power. So why address his position on this when we know that he lies because he's a communist? Would he support LGBT XYZ policies in Iran, in Syria, in Gaza? Of course not. They get thrown off buildings, for heaven's sake. So, you know, it's such dishonesty to try and take him at his word on stuff, because he isn't even talking about his Jew hatred right now. He wants to get elected. You can see I'm a little exorcised about this. So why don't we have your comment about that? But we really do want to get back to policy, because it's all interrelated. We know it is.
Yes. Yeah. But by the way, the bigger point is that anyone outside of Western civilization, any of the dictators, And as we've discussed before, I color code them: the reds, the greens, and the blues. The reds are the communists, the greens are the Islamists, and blues are the globalists for the UN colors. I don't believe anything that anyone of the reds, greens, and blues say. And I don't believe any dictators who are collectively red, greens, and blues. Now, by the way, within democracy, you also have politicians who lie, okay? So I'm not saying that everyone in Western civilization.
Yeah, they do.
You know, every politician tells the truth 100% of the time. But but my point is, you're guaranteed to hear lies from the reds, the greens, and the blues, because the reds, the greens, and the blues are all criminal organizations. They're all con artists. And so I use my favorite term that I use over and over again is life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And the forces of good, Western civilization, theoretically believe in life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for everybody. The forces of evil, which I call the reds, the greens, and the blues, believe in life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for me.
What are our colors? I just got to know, and then I've got to write down, or people want to know again, for you to repeat the reds. The reds are the communists. The greens are the environmentalists? What are they?
No, the Islamists. Green is the traditional color for Islam. If you see a mosque, it'll be colored green.
It's green. And blues are right. globalists?
Yes. If you see a helmet from a United Nations soldier, it's blue. So I color code the UN and all global organizations as blues. Islamists as greens. And the traditional color for communism is red.
And two colors encompass red, white, and blue. So what are we?
We're yellow. We're yellow for the sunlight. Sunlight of Western civilization. The sunlight of the rule of law. The sunlight of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Not cowards. Yellow the sunlight. No, I got it.
That's right. Yeah, it's my own color code. Right.
Okay.
So the yellows have nothing to do with cowards.
Good.
And so it's the sunlight. Okay.
Okay.
And because as individuals, but our ancestors, through Judaism and Christianity, brought light to paganism. They defeated paganism, and that's why I color code them yellow.
I hate to do this, but I teased and I said we were going to do that. We're going to have you back next time. I know I'm on next week on Tuesday. We'll have to request you so you can finish up. That's what we'll have to do.
And everyone
Ken Abramowitz.
Look at my website, savethewest.com.
Savethewest.com. That's savethewest.com. Kenneth Abramowitz, thank you so much. Well, we will have another guest right after this. Otherwise, I would have asked him to stay. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on The Alan Nathan Show.
Each day, more than 1,000 children across the world are diagnosed with cancer. And despite it being the leading cause of death by disease among children in the United States, many of today's standard treatments were approved more than 30 years ago. That's exactly why Northwestern Mutual has made it our mission to bring attention to this cause. We declare September 4th as Golden Moments Day, a day of national recognition across the United States to honor stories of resilience, community impact, and breakthroughs in research and treatments that will light the way to a brighter future. To reinforce our commitment, for each new financial plan delivered to prospective clients in September, the Northwestern Mutual Foundation will donate $100 to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, up to $2 million. That would fund 40,000 hours of research. But there is still work to be done. Help us make a lasting impact this September. I invite you to join us in our mission to find better treatments and cures for childhood cancer. Visit NorthwesternMutual.com to find an advisor near you.
Burgers and hot dogs may headline the grill, but baked beans are making a strong showing at summer cookouts. Chef James Briscione has more.
Baked beans are incredibly versatile. I use them in hamburger bakes, layer them into hot dogs with cheese, and even stuff them into grilled chili rellenos. They bring big flavor with little effort.
Chef's Chili Relleno recipe starts with poblano peppers stuffed with Bush's vegetarian baked beans, onions, jalapenos, and red bell pepper. For something heartier, hamburger baked beans combine seasoned ground beef with Bush's original baked beans.
That Chili Relleno dish is one of my favorites. It's easy to prep, great for vegetarian or gluten-free guests, and the beans add that smoky, savory bite that works with anything else on the plate.
Another go-to for feeding a crowd is baked bean and cheese hot dogs, made with Bush's brown sugar hickory baked beans, onions, and cheddar. Bush's baked beans varieties include original, brown sugar hickory, vegetarian, zero sugar added, and more. Visit bushbeans.com.
Already in orbit. Over 1 million messages have already been sent in hard-to-reach areas from national parks to remote trails. Kinga Phillips, travel expert.
As someone who's constantly off the beaten path, this changes everything. Now I can stay connected, even deep in the mountains or deserts.
For more information, visit T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
Some seizures may go unnoticed, but the stories of people with epilepsy will not. Share your story to educate others.
To empower others to seek treatment.
To show others they are not alone.
To help others change their journey.
Let's get everyone to start talking about epilepsy and seizures.
I am ready to share my story.
I'm ready to share my story.
Let's change our epilepsy story.
Let's change our epilepsy story.
For more information, visit changeourstory.org.
Welcome back to The Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today, and we are delighted to welcome veteran journalist whose work appears in Tablet, Real Clear Investigations, and The Federalist. He's author of The China Matrix, the epic story of how Donald Trump shattered a deadly pact and the plot against the president. The story of how Congressman Devin Nunes uncovered the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. Lee Smith joins us right now on The Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be here with you today.
Always a pleasure having you. Before we get to Hamas and the hostage deal, I know you have lots of thoughts about that. With so many scandals, it's hard to think that there's one that's the biggest political scandal. Whenever you wrote this, there were fewer uncovered scandals. I mean, the auto pen, not that I want to bring into question and debate it, but my goodness, there have been so many political scandals in U.S. history in the last, 15 years with, it's hard to choose, isn't it?
Well, Russiagate really set the template for a lot of the stuff that happened after, whether we're talking about the Ukraine impeachments, whether we're talking about the Lawfare campaign against Donald Trump, whether we're talking about January 6th. It's really, if you have to understand Russiagate to know what it looks like, because you have to understand the combination of the media, the intelligence services, and political operatives in Russiagate. That's really what I do. And that book is in 2019. But I agree with you. There's been lots of other very big scandals. But really, to understand what's happening, you really need to understand Russiagate. Because even today, a lot of people don't really understand what the press did at the time, right? They'll talk about the press as being biased or they missed the story. No, they didn't. The press was a crucial component of that, of an information operation targeting the American public. So that's why it's important to really, burrow
you
down.
You convinced
and get
me.
Russia
it makes it. Sense. Yeah. It makes sense. You convinced me because you're right. Many of the things that we're looking at today are outgrowths of that infrastructure that seemed to have been built, I would argue, from 2009 when a certain POTUS 44 came into office.
Well, that's interesting because, if you want to talk about the Hamas stuff, that's a very good introduction because, of course, the communications infrastructure was really built to sell the Iran deal. That's what Barack Obama did, this communications infrastructure, how to use the press as part of the intelligence services, as part of a spy operation. That was Barack Obama, and that's what happened during Russiagate. But the actual communications infrastructure for that was indeed built during 2013, 2014, and 15 to sell the Iran nuclear deal. And so that leads us right into where we are right now with President Trump, who, unlike Barack Obama, does not see Iran as a potential U.S. partner, does not believe that we share values with the Islamic Republic and its proxies, like the Islamic Resistance in Palestine, which is what Hamas is. So
isn't it fair to wonder? Isn't it fair to wonder whether an actual president of the United States did indeed share those values? Because sometimes we talk all around it. And we have to say, well, why would a U.S. president be sharing values like that with a terrorist country and organization? I don't think that's a digression. You could comment on that, or we can continue talking about the Hamas.
It's interesting. If you can elaborate a bit, I'm happy to talk about this. It's a very important subject.
I guess what it is that people who try to connect the dots of people's actions rather than their words, they keep asking themselves things like, why would a president go to so much trouble to build infrastructure, to push an agenda that lies to the American people and tells them that the Iran deal is going to help peace when it helps them get a nuclear weapon?
Right. Because you find these people like Barack Obama scattered throughout universities across the country. You find them in faculty lounges. You find them protesting. This is what the post October 7th protests were about. These were Obama's people who were out there celebrating the massacre of Israelis as well as Americans on October 7th. So this is where Barack Obama is. He comes from a very radical tradition. He comes from a very anti-American tradition. And I wrote about this last week for Tablet. I explained that, you know, if what you're trying to do is if you're trying to replace Israel with Iran, which is explicitly what Barack Obama did, that was the point of the Iran deal, to replace Israel and America's strategic architecture, as well as replacing the Jews with third world animals, like the different people who were protesting on behalf of Hamas, then what you're really doing is you're revising America, right? His effort was to transform America, and these were the instruments that he used. He used the Iran deal to privilege the third world lunatics and to downgrade normal Americans and normal American history and America's, you know, historical foundational Hebraic roots. I mean, of course, this is what the founders of the country believed in, but that's not what Barack Obama wanted.
Lee, I am just so happy in a sad sort of way that you didn't run away from that issue and you didn't run away from answering that directly. Let's give you some time, since we only have about 2.5 minutes, to talk about what's going on with the so-called last warning to Hamas to accept the hostage deal. So many people have heard this all before. What say you?
Well, I think it's fair to say at this point, after Donald Trump obliterated Iran's nuclear weapons program, that, you know, he's not weak, that he doesn't bluff. Right. But, you know, a lot of my friends that I discussed this with, they say that the emphasis on the hostages is a mistake. The way to end the war, is for Israel to continue to take land in Gaza, to continue operations. And that's really the way to do it, to basically encircle Hamas, and less emphasis on the hostages. Now, I happen to believe that the hostages are a poison pill for Hamas, and that the president, you know, President Trump understands this. They can't possibly give up all of these hostages at once, because they realize that they have nothing at that point.
They'd have nothing.
Entirely vulnerable.
That's
so
right.
What I believe is that the president understands this, and what the plans are, that's much harder to describe, because we know what the plans were with the Iran nuclear program, and that's blow it up. What the plans are for Hamas?
That is correct.
Gaza, we don't know.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, but fortunately, is a good way to end it, because it says everything right there. We really appreciate your time, Lee Smith.
Well, thank you.
People find you at Tablet and Real Clear Investigations.
Yeah, I write for Tablet. Well, I mean, I Tablet, read Tablet, and
read
that's
Tablet.
Where I am every week.
All right. Thank you so much, Lee Smith. We appreciate it. We'll be right back with another guest right after this. Don't go away on the Main Street Radio Network.
Tilly Ramsey, daughter of celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay, is ready to step out of her father's shadow into her own culinary adventures with the new series Dish It Out, premiering Friday, September 5th on Prime Video. A passionate foodie and aspiring chef, Tilly celebrates online trends and family recipes, alongside some surprise visitors in the kitchen, including her parents Gordon and Tana Ramsay, Gillian Jacobs, Frankie Grande, and many more. In each episode, Tilly receives a mystery box from chefs, influencers, and home cooks from around the world, and uses the ingredients to cook a dish for a studio guest. Tilly Ramsay.
I sat next to my father in the kitchen for my entire life and wanted to become a chef for as long as I can remember. Now that I've graduated culinary school, I'm ready to sharpen my skills and create exciting new dishes for my guests, and will be sure to have plenty of fun along the way.
Don't miss Dish It Out, starting this Friday, September 5th, only on Prime Video.
Summer has arrived, presenting great job opportunities within the travel industry. Pilot, the largest network of travel centers with nearly 900 locations across 44 states, is hiring 7,500 team members with weekly pay training, support, and competitive benefits, Pilot is committed to supporting its team and helping them make the most of their miles. Abby Bilbrey, field recruiter at Pilot, shares insights on the company's commitment to hiring as summer travelers hit the open road.
Pilot is hiring 7,500 team members called Journey Makers across our travel centers, on-site restaurants, and tanker fleet. We seek driven, reliable, authentic, and welcoming individuals to ensure our guests are fueled up, filled up, and lifted up for the road ahead. Join us to be part of a company that continues to show people they matter at every turn.
To learn more or to apply to become a Journey Maker, visit jobs.pilotflyingj.com/national hiring.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And while we wait a little bit for our guests, maybe if we don't get him, we'll get him a second segment. I am struck by some of the stories that we've heard just in the last hour, let alone the previous hour. I mentioned how Democrats, many lies, that caught in numerous lies just in the last 7 months. We're not talking about, a turnabout is fair play gotcha, like the Democrats tried to characterize. There's actual evidence behind the credible lies that they were caught telling, and the Democrats yet go on posing themselves as though they have some sort of moral authority. We will have to leave that as a tease, because we do indeed have our guest. And as you know, we can probably talk about this with him as well. He is a prominent Los Angeles-based private investigator of the Pinkerton Organization, best known for his investigation of the Wonderland Avenue murders, their cover-up, and the ties they exposed between LA's city government and organized crime. His books include Skullduggery and Sub Rosa, with his next book, The Last Lawman, due in 2026. Nils Grevelius joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, good morning. It's my sincere pleasure, Ms. Cataline.
Well, and your accent is delightful. I know that's relative. Everybody has an accent, but that is a delightful one. And before we get started on this horrible Ukrainian woman, refugee, who was stabbed on a U.S. train, do you find that? I was just sort of setting the table, and to watch Democrats and propaganda media continue to pose themselves as if they have moral authority when again and again and again they're caught in lies, and yet people still tend to believe them. In the Ukrainian story, the media is not even reporting it, and we'll get to that.
Okay, well, race is often their fulcrum, and their fulcrum and level play for power. When it doesn't work for them, they can't run away from it fast enough now, can they?
No, they can't, because they have a previous agenda. But it's interesting how they figure if they just ignore stuff long enough, people will. Anyway, it was just something I was getting started on because you were slightly delayed, not a problem. This story deserves lots of our attention because apparently the propaganda media does not want to talk about a Ukrainian refugee. I mean, 2 years ago, Ukrainians were like angels. They were practically like gods, but they cannot seem to lift a finger to cover a story that one, a woman was stabbed to death on a U.S. train. Talk about it. Take it from there and talk to us more about it.
Well, I couldn't help but notice there was a kind of a ranging discussion in Wikipedia edits over this. I mean, with user Vegan416 saying this is getting too much attention for the wrong reasons. And user Insanity Clown number one, murders happen all the time. Wow. So Wikipedia is where Gibbon Media goes to curate the story in perpetuity. In other words, if they can put it in stone in Wikipedia, I mean, you can't dispute it after that now, can you? Then they'll change gears and turn it into something else later. And this mayor, she calls the media her partners in this. She says that the system is broken. Well, my question, Ms. Catalin, is who broke it? Who broke the system?
Yeah.
If not these people.
Well, it's amazing how they create the problem and then they come in on a not so gallant horse with a solution to the problem that we never needed. Let's talk more about this case and about a suspect, DeCarlos Brown, who is on surveillance, footage, hauling off and just killing this woman unprovoked. She's just sitting on a train, minding her own business, and he kills her. And somehow they don't want to talk about it. Let's talk about it. What do you think was going on? And rant away if you want, since they won't.
Well, about this? This man has a long history of bad behavior, criminality, getting arrested, getting barely punished for his criminality. No one can say that he's so crazy that he doesn't know what it is that he's doing. He fled the scene, didn't he? Didn't he remove his bloody hoodie to dispose of it? In other words, covering up the crime is cognizance of guilt. He knew what he was doing was wrong and did it anyway. When the mayor says that they're not doing, that the system isn't doing enough for the mentally ill, etc. Well, she is the system.
Right.
Right. And to her, this victim has no political value. So she can't get away from it fast enough. Same thing with Roy Cooper, the governor of that state, who's trying to become a United States senator. He's part of the problem as well. And think about what the metro is on so many cities in this nation, Ms. Catalin. Is it not a hunting ground where the most disordered and irrationally violent can find people to victimize who can't get away from them?
It's a captive audience. That's for sure they're going to run to.
Right, exactly. And they keep telling us how great public transit is. Here in Los Angeles, we have attack after attack after attack with Mayor Karen Bass. Maybe she's in Ghana when these attacks occur. I'm not entirely certain, but the people on the Metro board will occasionally go on radio and say that they themselves are afraid to ride the Metro. Once in a while, one of them will make an appearance and do it, but only with a bunch of men like me armed with machine guns or something to protect them from their constituents. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen, Ms. Catalin.
Thank you. Mr. Grevelius, people want to run away from your last name, but it's delightful to say. I hope I said it. Grevelius. What is really even almost more outrageous or more stunning right now is that Trump seems to have boxed these pro-criminals in a corner. And now they've come out of the closet, they've taken out their masks, taken off their masks to show themselves as pro-criminal and anti-victim. I mean, and they're open and almost proud about it. Why is it, here's my question, why Republicans still can't make enough of a case about that? We think we're making it, but with the propaganda media, we have to be able to call them what they are, which is pro-criminal, pro-crime, and anti-victim.
Well, I agree with you. The problem with the GOP generally, the machinery of the GOP, is that while the Democrats function like a Jonestown cult, the GOP has become like the Habsburgs, ossified, inbred, and slow moving. And they can't decide, the machinery of the party can't decide whether it's Trump's party or they're going to be able to wrestle control of it back. I mean, I see people like Jonah Goldberg being interviewed in various media outlets, Ms. Catalin, and he seems to think, yes, we're going to be able to take the party back from these horrifying populists, that sort of thing. I don't think they can. They left the party in a shambles as of 2009, and they hated
exactly.
the Tea Party just as much as they hate the MAGA people.
Yeah.
So, leadership is badly needed, and that's where we're at. And as always, on the right side of the aisle, it's the citizens who have to make the politicians do it rather than the politicians lead.
Well, except that we have this totally different animal in the form of Donald Trump, who saw a need to start cleaning up the disastrous cities, all yes. run and controlled by Democrats, not only the Democrats fighting him every step of the way because it's all about politics, and they are right. pro-criminal and anti-victim, but they are, that's how he's got them almost in a checkmate, because no Republican pre-Trump in the modern era has had the guts to go after an ugly crime. I
agree with you.
You know what? I meant to ask you, can you stay for one more segment?
Of course I can. I'd be delighted.
That's so great. I've got a space for you. Let's close out the show together. We've just getting started. Bill's Gravilius is going to join us for the next segment. This is Karen Cataline. You're listening to The Ellen Nathan Show here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Ellen Nathan Show. As promised, we still have Nils Gravilius, prominent Los Angeles private investigator of the Pinkerton Organization, best known for his investigation of the Wonderland Avenue murders, their cover-up, and the ties they exposed between LA's city government and organized crime. I better tell you his books, because you're going to want to read them, Skullduggery and Sub Rosa, and his next book, Last Lawman, due out in 2026. Let's start there, Nils, because you are a fascinating guest. I have not had the chance to talk to you before. Tell us about the book you have coming up.
Oh, it's The Last Lawman. It's my professional memoir. It's about 30 years of foot in the field in the city of Los Angeles, but operating internationally also. I was in the Pinkerton service for a few years, and before that I was in U.S. Army, and it's been a great career, and I wanted to share some of the details with the public. I don't give up who my clients are. Secrecy is coin of the realm in my profession. But I talk about getting absconded fugitives in Mexico and crossing other borders to conduct certain jobs, that sort of thing, working on confidence men.
Losing you. Can you stand near a window? Yes. Repeat that last sentence. We lost you there for a sec.
Oh, it's a book about working in international fugitive cases and conflicts of interest, you know, public corruption involving mm-hmm. judges, lawyers, that sort of thing. A couple of assault cases, con men, guys posing as hitmen who are just extortionists, things like that.
It sounds like every day, run-of-the-mill, just everyday work in your field. When people hear this, especially as it relates to Los Angeles, the first thing we think of is Chinatown. Do you think they'll make a screenplay, or you can write a screenplay on this book, part of your story?
Well, you know, I could write a screenplay, I guess. I've written this memoir myself. Chinatown happens to be my favorite film, and I knew personally the man who provided the subject matter expertise that enabled Robert Towne to write the screenplay. Wow. It was a character named Freddie Otash. Huh. And when I was a Pinkerton man, Otash was our go-to for identifying wiretaps back in the age of analog switching equipment. Otash died probably 92 or 93, he was a great man, and he also provided the source material for James Ellroy when he wrote L.A. Confidential.
Oh, I remember that film. Yeah.
Well, L.A. Confidential and Chinatown meshed together like 2 years. I've long believed that there should be a third film in this way. Maybe I'll head in that direction. I don't know.
What would be the third film about? What would it be about?
Well, how about the 1970s or 1980s? There were a lot of things going on in Los Angeles.
I'm losing you. I'm sorry. We want to hear every word. Okay.
Are you there?
Start that again. Yeah. We have a sort of a questionable connection. So if you could stand by your window, that seems to help on cell phones.
Well, if I stand by the window, everybody
That's
can
much
see
better.
My muscular physique, Ms. Kathleen. I don't want women flinging their underwear at me here. Okay, I'm standing next to the window.
That could
goodness,
be fun.
The crowd is
Niels.
Gathering. Oh, my goodness. Ms. Kathleen, you're nothing but a troublemaker. What am I going to do with myself today?
We should do a comedy routine. I'll tell you, that sounds great. Okay, continue. I'm holding on every word.
Okay, I'll give you an example of what would make a third film about Los Angeles key to understanding the corruption. There was a story in the San Jose Mercury News in the 90s about in the 80s, the CIA allegedly bringing cocaine into Los Angeles. Well, it was probably more likely CIA sources were doing it. The CIA was looking in the other direction. But there were a couple of gangsters afoot in Los Angeles in the 80s who pioneered cocaine distribution, particularly in the black community, named El Raider Browning Jr., who we call Ray Ray, and his friend James Harold Holiday, Doc Holiday.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, there's a trail of dead bodies, and there's even a thing where Ray Ray once muscled his attorney into getting out of his suit and tie, and Ray Ray put the suit on and was sneaking out of Metropolitan Detention Center in 1987, and some enterprising security officer was watching as this lawyer walking across the parking lot suddenly broke into a furious pimp strut. And they thought, now, wait a minute, that doesn't look like the lawyer. That looks like Ray Ray. And those are the sorts of things that a good film could be made of about Los Angeles. But I don't want your listeners to think that what I've written is fiction. My professional memoir is true life, the life that I've lived, the sacrifices I've made, the things that I've seen. Huh. I'm going to be in the saddle for many more years. But I wanted to get this book out, and I think it'll be an important book in the canon of true crime and people understanding how Los Angeles actually works. I don't
it's
do
terrifying.
Cheating husbands. I
yeah.
don't do insurance claims. I do everything that the LAPD, the LA sheriffs, and the FBI were supposed to be doing and didn't.
And is that why, because you just answered the question I was going to ask you, why you call it The Last Lawman? Because you think that L.A. is lawless? Most of us can look at it and say, yeah, it probably is.
Well, it probably is. I worked for the Pinkerton Service. Alan Pinkerton came here from the U.K. in 1852 and landed in Chicago, got a quick look around, and realized that he could make a business for himself doing what the police wouldn't do. He was not a cop. He was a school teacher and a labor activist. And he put himself hard at work in solving crimes all over the United States. Now, he's somewhat controversial to some people, but he did every single thing that the police were supposed to be doing and didn't.
We have to leave it there. We only have very little time left, and I kind of did take a right turn here. We do want to remember refugee Irina Zarutska, which the media will not talk about. It's going to be alternate media that's going to make this story important, and we started out talking about that. Tell everybody how they can find your book and when it's coming out, The Last Lawman.
Well, it'll be out in time for Father's Day 2026, published by Post Hill Press. Thank you for having me on, Ms. Catalina. I'm very grateful to you. Enjoy your day.
And it was an exciting interview. It was fun to talk to you, too. Nils Gravilius, and I'm going to give you the spelling of that name just because I have the time to do so. NILSGREV, as in Victor, ILLIUS. What a fun interview. We could have done an hour. That does it for the Ellen Nathan Show. Tune in every day for more on the Main Street Radio Network. Have a good day.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.